It's time to explore wrestling's past and potential future with your weekly dose of a segment we call What If, only found here on the WWE Podcast.
Well, it's time for another What If, and Anthony DeMarco joins me tonight to talk about a topic that really has never crossed my mind, and that is, what if Randy Orton and his babyface turn in 2004 was actually successful, and it didn't end up being something that they had to take a few steps back on? And Anthony, I'm glad you brought this topic up, and it's something I really have thought about during the day as you proposed it to me, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm excited to talk to you about this because it's really something we've never discussed. So first of all, how are you doing, and welcome.
Doing well, man. And I've been thinking about this ever since he appeared on the Broken Skull sessions, and he kind of revealed that early on in his career, and just around this time, I believe he was 24, 25 years old, he wasn't the most mature, and behind the scenes, he probably wasn't the most professional. And had it not been for guys like Triple H and maybe to a lesser extent Ric Flair, you know, helping him along in evolution, both on and off screen, maybe things wouldn't have turned out so swimmingly for Randy Orton. But I think his failed initial babyface run in 2004 was a clear-cut example of stuff going on behind the scenes that clearly affected what was going on screen.
Mm-hmm. No question about that, and we all have heard the stories, and Randy has admitted himself that he wasn't exactly the most up-and-up, stand-up, you know, man's man guy, that he was a bit of a problem backstage, and I think even during the program with Drew McIntyre, that Drew was bringing up the fact that if it wasn't for his name, you know, that he pretty much wouldn't be here, and Randy admitted it too. And Randy Orton's name has carried him through a lot of crap that would have gotten most people fired. I mean, I've even heard stories of Randy Orton, like, you know, just exposing his male genitalia, let's say, to producers and the guys in the production truck, and wasn't the best. He was kind of a ladies man, but a player, and he didn't have the best reputation during that time frame. So yeah, certainly the backstage stuff had, I think, a bit of an impact on that, no question.
And if you think back to when he broke into WWE, obviously he was a part of that famous OVW crop, you know, along with Brock Lesnar and Cena and Shelton Benjamin and Batista. But when I think of Randy Orton when he broke in, I really lump him in with John Cena and Batista, because Brock Lesnar, he showed up in 2002, and even though they all technically broke in during the summer of 2002, Brock Lesnar got shot straight to the top right away. You know, we talked about it with Brock and The Rock, and Brock becoming the face of the company just 3 months into his title run, or his WWE run, actually. And then you got Shelton Benjamin, who started off in Team Angle with Charlie Haas, then broke away. They became the world's greatest tag team. And even when he did become a singles competitor, he never achieved anything more than the Intercontinental / US Championship mid-tier type of titles. So when you look at Batista, Randy Orton, and Cena, they all kind of really hit their stride right away. But when you think back into 2003, when Batista and Orton were in Evolution together and Cena was over on SmackDown as the doctor at Thugonomics, Randy Orton was the guy early on who you kind of saw being positioned as, you know, the guy that they believe was probably going to be a successor for the likes of Triple H or Kurt Angle. You know, he was involved in the Elimination Chamber match at SummerSlam in 2003, won the Intercontinental Championship at Armageddon 2003, obviously had the program with Mick Foley in early 2004. And obviously the handicap match with Rock and Saw Connection Evolution included in there at WrestleMania 20. And even though Cena was kind of moving his way up the ranks, Batista was a bit farther behind those guys, I still found that Randy Orton was the guy being undisputedly positioned above John Cena and above Batista. And indicative of that was his World Heavyweight Championship victory at SummerSlam in 2004 against Chris Benoit. So do you think that right out of the gate that he was positioned much higher than the other two in Cena and Batista?
I think initially, yes. I don't think that they maybe had understood really what they had in their hands with, you know, Batista and Cena just yet. Batista obviously would come a little bit later facing Triple H. But as we all know, when stables get together, they're meant to typically disassemble. I mean, when you put a stable together, the purpose of it is not necessarily to have that stable continue in and of itself, but rather build stars within it and then have that eventual crumble and collapse of the faction to have new single stars come out of it. More often than not, we do see that. And Randy Orton, I think, was positioned initially above them. And I think that they believed that Randy Orton being a babyface against the really just hated, loathed Triple H, to his credit, would have been a successful formula. And I remember seeing that. I'll never forget it. I mean, the one thing that comes to mind with the babyface run of Orton, the very first thing that I think about is the monster loogie that he spit in Triple H's face on that Monday Night Raw after he won it. So I didn't know if you were going to touch on that or if I'm getting ahead of it, but so to me, that's the image that's in my brain with Randy Orton's initial run.
Of course, and I'm right there with you, and I will always remember that right after he spit the loogie in Triple H's face, then he hits him over the head with the title belt. And Batista and Ric Flair, you know, jump in the ring and chase him into the crowd. And Batista actually trips.
Yes.
As he's chasing him on the outside. So, and that was the first time we ever saw the Randy Orton character. And that whole segment was a lot funnier because he was still using the Evolution theme song. He was still using the Evolution video package. He had not yet had his very own theme song. He was the only member of that group to not have his own exclusive theme music. And then obviously he had the Burn in My Light theme song, which in some ways I still do think may be better than the current one he has. But that's neither here nor there. And, you know, thinking about that initial run with him as champion, like, it only lasted a month. He dropped it the very next pay-per-view at Unforgiven 2 Triple H. And it's crazy to think that in the span of a month, they already realized that he wasn't ready. So I guess the first easy question to ask is, do you think he would have dropped it that quickly to Triple H had it worked?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you don't have the youngest world champion in history beat Chris Benoit, beat him in a rematch, and then drop it to Triple H that quickly. I think that they accelerated things more than they would have had this been a massively accepted, match, or I'm sorry, an accepted role for Randy is what I'm trying to say. If the fans accepted him as a babyface and they were getting behind him and they were blowing the roof off the place for Randy, then yeah, I don't think there would have been a need to drop it to Triple H. I think it was kind of a, in case of emergency, you know, break glass kind of thing. And I just don't see, especially when you put it on a guy for the first time. I know it didn't happen at WrestleMania, but it happened at their second biggest pay-per-view of SummerSlam. Why you would pull it off him that quickly if there wasn't, A, probably things going on backstage that was concerning on a personal level, on an ethical, moral level with Randy Orton himself, and also that the fans weren't really just grabbing onto him as a babyface, that it wasn't going the way that maybe Vince had envisioned the response going. So yeah, I think it was a kind of an emergency switch to Triple H.
And do you think it hurt the Randy Orton character at all that they pulled the plug so quickly? Because while he stayed babyface for a couple of months following this, and I remember he was part of, you know, the in the Survivor Series match that year, he was part of the babyface side. He tagged with Jericho and Maven and Chris Benoit against Edge, Triple H, Batista, and Snitsky. And he stayed babyface well past the Royal Rumble. Like, he faced off against Triple H at the Royal Rumble for the World Heavyweight Championship, and Triple H retained it. And they ultimately returned him back to a heel to build his program with The Undertaker leading into WrestleMania 21. So, I mean, it wasn't just like he lost the championship and then they went on their merry way and turned him back heel. Like, they tried to string this out for 4 or 5 months and it really just did not work. So obviously him and Triple H rekindled their rivalry more so in 2009 when Triple H was the babyface and Orton was the heel, with a legacy and the McMahons getting involved in that when Randy Orton was punk kicking everybody left, right, and center. But do you look back negatively on the initial version of Orton versus Triple H because of how badly the Randy Orton babyface gimmick was?
I'll say this. I don't really think about it. And, you know, the fact I don't think about it, I think it gives you the answer. And it was underwhelming. I think the only thing that most fans would take from it is he was the youngest world champion ever, right? Like that's what they take from it. They take the loogie, the belt shot. They take the fact that he was the youngest champion, and the rest of that is really forgotten. I mean, when you look back at Randy Orton's career, he is best known for being a heel. He has been outspoken about his favorite role being a heel. He has been very, very forthright about that. And I think most fans would agree that while Randy Orton's a brilliant talent, one of the best of all time, he is better tailored to be a heel. And some of his best moments are being a heel, like you alluded to in 09 with Legacy versus the McMahons. And I remember him handcuffing Stephanie McMahon to – or wasn't that Stephanie? I think it was Shane Triple H to the ring ropes, and then like DDTing Stephanie and then kissing her like on the cheek or something like that, making Triple H watch. And then the home invasion, throwing Randy or Triple H through the glass and all that kind of stuff. And then having their match, by the way, I know it's a little bit of a sidebar, but having their match at WrestleMania be just a normal wrestling match was to me one of the most like confusing things of all time. Like, why the hell wouldn't they have allowed them to be at least a street fight, something like that? It made no sense. But certainly Randy Orton as a babyface in that first run, forgettable. I mean, I don't ever think about it other than we just know that quick stat on his resume about him being the youngest champion.
And I guess if we could pull one positive away from it, other than him being the youngest world champion, as you just alluded to, was the fact that it built to him versus The Undertaker, and it stretched way beyond WrestleMania 21. You know, Randy Orton eventually goes to SmackDown, and they in the summer of 2005, they rekindle that rivalry where they have the match at SummerSlam, I believe. Then they have the casket match at No Mercy when he subsequently lights it on fire. Undertaker returns following the Survivor Series match where Randy Orton was the sole survivor, a Hell in a Cell match between the two at Armageddon 2004. And I think even if the initial babyface run would have worked, we would have probably have gotten a Randy Orton Undertaker rivalry eventually. But now that I'm saying that, you know, John Cena never had a one-on-one program with The Undertaker, barring that short-lived one in the summer of 2003. But Cena never really had an extended program with The Undertaker, and I think that was in large part because John Cena was the main event-level babyface, so why would he ever cross paths with The Undertaker? Because The Undertaker was so beloved. So do you think that we would have gotten Undertaker versus Randy Orton had his babyface gimmick worked right off the bat? And even if he had, do you think it would have been as good?
No. Randy Orton as a heel versus Taker is where the money is at. I mean, we saw it when they first faced off at WrestleMania 21. The image I'm getting in my brain of that is the choke slam turned into an RKO. And I remember watching that going, oh my God. Then I remember thinking the streak is in big jeopardy, because at the time the RKO was a pretty protected finish. It still is today, one of the most protected of all time. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And it was a brilliant transition. The match, I think, is often overlooked, but I think fans should go back and watch it. It's not an absolute masterpiece, but it's a lot better than you probably remember. I think it was a career defining moment for Randy Orton, even in a loss. But no, I don't think that they would have crossed paths as soon as they did had Randy Orton stayed a babyface and been a successful one. That said, I mean, if they did cross paths, they could have billed it as babyface versus babyface, but I don't think it would have been at WrestleMania, because if Randy was very successful as a babyface, you don't want him going against The Undertaker, because if the fans are going to be forced to choose babyface Orton that we really like, or protecting the streak, I think they're going to go with protecting the streak with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, essentially turning Randy Orton heel. And if that's not the goal, then you shouldn't do it. So, yeah, I don't think they would have crossed paths until he eventually turned heel. And I would assume that he at some point would have turned heel, even if his run was successful as a babyface. I think it's just natural for that kind of progression, unless your name is John Cena, for that to happen.
Would you rank The Undertaker in the top three alongside maybe Triple H and John Cena as his best rivals, or do you think Edge would kind of edge him out? No pun intended.
Pun intended, yeah. I still believe I liked the Randy Orton and Undertaker programs. I really did. But I think Edge and Randy had even a better chemistry together. I think that as great as Mark Calloway is and as great as Randy Orton is, and I did really enjoy their programs together, I still think Edge and Orton, of course, with rated RKO, we have them in so many blood feuds together once they turned on one another. I still think, and this is really crazy because I still believe Undertaker in the totality of his career is above Edge, and that's no disrespect to Edge, but Randy Orton and Edge had a special chemistry together, and now even with what they did over the last 2 years after Edge and Orton had their program in 2020 that got all effed up because of COVID, that still adds adds to it for me. So I still believe, given all that, that Edge does, pun intended, edge out The Undertaker in his top three.
And speaking about rivals, we obviously have to talk about John Cena, because in a lot of ways, John Cena and Randy Orton were the successors to Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock of the prior era, and really kind of carried the company on their backs through that transition from ruthless aggression into the PG era. And obviously you had the likes of Taker and HBK and Triple H kind of lingering around, and still some up and coming guys like maybe Sheamus and Batista helping them out. But I think we all knew and can look back and say those two were the faces of that era. And in a lot of ways, the last two superstars of that magnitude maybe we'll ever see in the business. And, you know, we've obviously heard that, you know, they fought too much. They went back to Orton and Cena way too many times. But when you look at it, they never had a one-on-one match at a WrestleMania. The closest that came was a triple threat, including Triple H at WrestleMania 34. So still kind of say that they were these like great rivals, even though they didn't have one single one-on-one match with against one another at WrestleMania. So I guess, for one, I'll ask you, how would you summarize their rivalry as a whole? And the second part of that question would be, do you think it would have been any different, for better or for worse, had Randy Orton's babyface gimmick worked in the first place?
I think it would have been, as far as being better or worse, I think they would have kept John Cena babyface. I think even if the people loved Randy Orton as a babyface, I think that they still, in the pecking order of things, place John Cena above Randy Orton. Therefore, I think that naturally, people would have, if they were forced to choose, would have probably at the time gone with John Cena, and the WWE would have tried to position that to happen as well. But I think that their program probably would have been as good as it was, because, again, you would have had Randy Orton eventually fall into the role that he was born to be, which is a heel. That would have happened. Now, if they were still babyface, and WWE was like, let the fans decide, we're not going to direct it, then I think there would have been a lot of back and forth. Babyface is can happen, and I'm okay with that. And I think that they would have been still very successful against one another. I really don't think it would have been looked down on any more than it is now. I think because they had such good chemistry against one another, and it's so funny that we haven't seen them in a match together in how many years, and yet if they still had a match today, it would feel like it's too much. It's crazy because of how many they did have. At least that's how I feel, that even in 2021, if they did have one more match, I'd be interested because it's nostalgic. But at the same time, I'd be like, oh, man, I feel like I've seen this 100 million times. And so, yeah, I think that ultimately wouldn't have been as affected. But in the totality of John Cena versus Randy Orton, I did really enjoy a lot of their programs together. They never had a WrestleMania match, which is a shame given how great they were together. And when you look at it too, Triple H and Austin never had a WrestleMania match, and they had a really good program heading into like No Way Out 2001 in their Three Stages of Hell match, still one of my favorite matches of all time. And so they, among other programs, other feuds, unfortunately never got that WrestleMania moment. But I don't think that since they didn't get the WrestleMania moment and match that I go, oh, this program isn't as good as it could have been, because they did everything they possibly could do together. And so I don't think that the fact they didn't get the WrestleMania moment hurts this, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, this was an era when I kind of really detached from the product right around 2008 up until 2011. And that was right in the thick of their major rivalry. But I feel as though that from, let's say, 2012 to 2014, like, Randy Orton kind of faded into obscurity a bit. Like, WrestleMania 26, he's in a triple threat match with Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase. WrestleMania 27, to be frank with you, I don't even remember what he did. WrestleMania 28, he's in a six-man tag team match with Sheamus and The Big Show against The Shield. WrestleMania 29, again, I think he fought Kane, to be quite honest with you. And then he didn't get back into the main event until WrestleMania 30 when he walked in as the undisputed WWE World Heavyweight Champion. So, I mean, I think that for whatever reason, those years in the early 2010s that Randy Orton was not at all really part of the main event scene kind of maybe robbed us of that. Because, you know, I think back to WrestleMania 27, like, maybe that would have been the perfect time to pull the trigger on Randy Orton versus John Cena in the main event. Like, I know that was mainly built around building towards The Rock and his return and building towards him and John Cena a year out, but I think Randy Orton going in as champion over The Miz would have made for a way better main event than Miz versus John Cena. And like I'm saying, I'm thinking back as hard as I can. I really don't even remember what Randy Orton did at that WrestleMania. So, yeah, I think like they beat it to death way too much, even for me looking back on it, even though I didn't watch it in real time. But I still think that for whatever reason, and you kind of brought it up with Austin and Triple H, a match that should have happened at WrestleMania 18. I think that we were kind of robbed in a way because we never got to see them on the grandest stage of them all. And on a bit of a side note, even though I touched on it earlier, what do you think about Randy Orton's kind of fade into obscurity in from 2011 just about until early 2014?
Yeah, that is a black hole in his career, isn't it? It just feels like he didn't exist. And he was there as kind of a body, a legacy star that you knew you were going to get a good match out of. And I heard an analogy about Randy during this time and really throughout a lot of his career is he's the guy that he doesn't have to try and he puts on a great match. He's the guy that kind of does 55 miles an hour in the fast lane and does exactly the speed limit. Doesn't go more than he needs to, doesn't go less than he needs to, just does exactly what's expected of him. And he doesn't really have to, again, really bust his ass to have a great match. And that's how I felt a lot during Randy Orton's career, especially during that time where you knew what you were going to get. Like, he was just a guy that you felt never reached his full potential, and it's, you always felt it's kind of a shame, and you knew there was more, and he just felt unmotivated. He felt like he was going through the motions during this time, and really up until, you could argue until Edge returned in 2020, you could argue that even up until then he was uninspired, and Edge coming back was the best thing to happen to Randy Orton because now he's able to really write off the end of his career. Now, I'm not saying Randy Orton's retiring, but I think that fans will now remember this program with Edge and Randy Orton, certainly. But to answer your question, though, Randy Orton actually defeated CM Punk at WrestleMania 27. I had to look it up in a match.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Randy Orton defeated CM Punk in a match at WrestleMania 27, which I barely remember. So that's crazy. Like, how do I not remember that either? I don't remember that match at all.
Well, WrestleMania 27, so that was just prior to the Summer of Punk. because the Summer of Punk was 2011.
Right.
And then Punk went into WrestleMania 28 as WWE champion, and I believe that's when he had the Chicago Street fight against Chris Jericho, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess that was kind of really the kickstarter to one of the most memorable championship runs in the history of the WWE. But to bring it back to Randy Orton, and it's so easy to go off track when you talk wrestling, especially in nostalgic purposes. But I guess we'll look at Triple H, because he's kind of like the only rival that we haven't really talked about, aside from that short bit right after Randy Orton's initial World Heavyweight Championship victory. And we touched on it earlier, but they rekindled that rivalry in 2008, obviously had the triple threat match with John Cena, and then it spilled all the way into just about the summer of 2009. Batista got involved. They had the one-on-one match at WrestleMania 25, and I believe Randy Orton won that match, correct?
I believe so. Oh, wait, no. Triple H, I think Triple H won.
He retained the championship?
I believe he did at 25. I'll have to look up.
Because Randy Orton won the Royal Rumble, and then which was kind of weird, he became the number one contender as a heel, and then it actually led to, I believe Randy Orton won because then at Backlash it was Batista, Shane, and Triple H versus Randy Orton and Legacy, and then it kind of switched into Batista and Randy Orton. So I guess I'll ask you, what do you think back when you look on Randy Orton versus Triple H? Who do you really see as the heel? Because I think we could both agree that both of them historically have been much better as heels. And do you think that maybe it would have been better had that initial rivalry between the two and the initial split of Evolution caught fire like WWE had hoped?
Yeah, I think it would have meant more, because they would have had a history that you could emotionally be invested in. Now, we still did because of their history, because they were in Evolution, because Randy Orton was really just benefited by being under the learning tree of Ric Flair and, of course, Triple H there to kind of put him under his wing. But yeah, I think it would have been more successful if this would have worked and he would have been a successful babyface and gone on to have a monstrous success. But that's not what happened. And I did look this up too, because I have to Wikipedia everything. Triple H did beat Randy Orton at WrestleMania 25. In a match that was almost 25 minutes, and that was the whole stipulation. If Triple H was counted out or DQ'd, he would have lost the belt. But no, Triple H did win in the main event. But I do think that when I look at this program between as a whole, when I look at Randy Orton, Triple H, I do look at the fact that they were better heels, as you said, no doubt. They were much better heels than they were baby faces. But if I was going to pick a guy that I believed was a better baby face and got behind more, I would believe that Triple H was. Because Triple H, he was born to be a heel like Randy Orton. But Triple H, I think, was better on the mic than Orton was. And Orton's gotten better. But during that time, Triple H was, I think, much better than Randy Orton. And you could have gotten a much more convincing promo from Triple H to make you want to be on his side. Triple H was more respected. He was the veteran, so he has that behind him. People love the fact that, you know, even if we get time to hate you, we know we're eventually going to come around to love you. It's just it's a cycle that constantly is running and continues to run to this day. So I think Triple H, when I look back at it in the totality of their program, it was a big success. It was key to Randy Orton's career being a success. It was key to Randy Orton and keeping his longevity and being able to reach the level that he did, even if Randy Orton wasn't successful as a babyface. I think that this is one of the most important and probably top three. I would put Randy Orton, Triple H, as like one of the top three in Randy Orton's most important opponents.
So as we close it out here, I think the guy who benefited the most from Randy Orton's babyface run not working was Batista. Because while Evolution was first happening and Randy Orton was still a part of it, Batista was kind of an afterthought. He was just the muscle. He was the heavy. He was the tag team champion alongside Ric Flair while Randy Orton got the Intercontinental Championship push. And we often forget, but Batista is the same age as Triple H. You know, he's 10 years older than Randy Orton, which is kind of weird because he came up with John Cena and Brock Lesnar. But following Randy Orton's failed run as champion and the top babyface on Monday Night Raw in mid to late 2004, there was still a void left as the top level babyface on Monday Night Raw. And we've talked about that several times over the past couple weeks, you know, with Shawn Michaels kind of, you know, bridging the gap between Austin and Rock to Batista and Stone Cold Steve Austin, or Jericho and Benoit kind of doing the stopgap duty. But when the Randy Orton babyface push did not work, that hole was still left unfilled, and it eventually went to Batista, who won the 2005 Royal Rumble, defeated Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 21, and ultimately became, for I would say at least 2 or 3 years, the second top babyface in the company right under John Cena, while Randy Orton became one of the main event level heels. So I ask you, do you think Batista would have had the success that he did had it not been for the failed Randy Orton babyface run?
No. I think that that is one of the most important, really just mistakes of WWE, to cast Randy Orton as a babyface and then have it blow up, only to have Batista really be the one to step up and take that spot. And Batista was a much more likable guy. He was obviously part of Evolution. He was the muscle. He was the guy that would come in and level the playing field, literally and figuratively, for Evolution. And I think that having Batista in that spot would not have happened if it was very successful with Randy Orton, because they would have said, well, Randy Orton's already filled this. We don't need a second guy to do this. In fact, let's turn Batista heel. Let's keep him heel. I think he would have, you know, gone the other way. And I don't think it would have worked as well, because I think Batista as a babyface, at least at that time, was a much better call. I'm not talking about down the line. We all know him getting booed, winning the Royal Rumble, and being in WrestleMania 30 main event, getting booed out of the building. We remember all that. Different time and place. But during this time, the move to have Batista be the babyface was absolutely right for the picking, because the fact that Triple H was talking trash behind his back and Batista's right outside the door smiling. I remember that image very vividly of, the guy that is all muscle and no brain, at least that's how Triple H viewed him, was starting to understand and realize that Triple H was using him. And it just kept building and building and building and eventually exploded with Batista. And obviously, yeah, we have Batista Undertaker at WrestleMania. I mean, I think this was a really, really just brilliant mistake, a beautiful mistake for Batista to have Randy Orton's babyface run blow up.
It's crazy, just kind of like the butterfly effect. And I just think that the run that Batista had, and I guess the legs kind of got cut out early a bit, because I felt as soon as they kind of started pushing Undertaker in the championship picture in 2007, defeating Batista for that championship, as you just brought up, it kind of just pushed Batista in the backseat. You know, WrestleMania 24, I'll never forget that he had an interpromotional match with Umaga, while, you know, John Cena and Randy Orton and Triple H were in the triple threat match for the WWE title. Edge was against The Undertaker. And then Batista eventually turns heel. I believe it was in late 2009 when he turned on Rey Mysterio at Bragging Rights or something. And then in 2010, he starts having the rivalry with John Cena. And I believe they had a Mania match at WrestleMania 26, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just crazy to think that that was all a result of Randy Orton's failed babyface run following SummerSlam 2004. So I guess as we get to our final thoughts here, do you think that in a weird way, his failed run as a babyface when he first split from Evolution was ultimately a good thing? Or do you think it kind of hurt his confidence and how he was viewed behind the scenes, and it took him way longer to reach his full potential? Because as you said a bit earlier, we only really saw peak Randy Orton in early 2020.
Well, I think both. I think both, actually. And the reason I say both is because, yes, it did hurt Randy Orton's confidence. Yes, they had to kind of shift gears and figure out what the hell they're going to do. And it did hurt his credibility. I think it shook his confidence. I think it shook WWE. And we're like, what are we going to do? We thought this would work. I think all of that. And yes, but I also think that that was a good thing at the same time. And because it made Randy, it made WWE realize that this is not your next big baby face. And that's okay, because this guy's ultra athletic. He's got name brand value. He has sat under the learning tree with Ric Flair and Batista and Triple H for a couple of years. And you have a guy that you, okay, it didn't work. Fine. But now we have a monster heel on our hands. So I think that them learning that sooner than later was better for Randy, better for the company overall, because we just alluded to Batista being able to step up and take that spot, among other guys getting at least an opportunity to do so. At the same time, you learn very quickly. It didn't take long for Randy Orton to realize and the company to realize he's way better off being a heel. He's way more comfortable. It feels way more natural. It's like Charlotte Flair is a flat out babyface, or Seth Rollins as a babyface. Just something icky. It doesn't feel right. And you just don't buy it. And Randy Orton's one of those guys that at this point in his career, he could be a babyface because he's just a legacy star and the RKO is so damn over. And he's, I think, stepped up his game in a massive way over the last couple of years. He could do it, but Randy Orton's never wanted to do it. He's always loved being hated. And I think so my answer to your question without continuing on is yes to both.
Yep, I would agree with that as well, because it established him as a main event level heel and in a lot of ways became the successor to Triple H. And it paved the way for a guy like Batista. And I do think that in the early to mid 2000s, Batista was one of the staples and cornerstones of WWE. And I think in a lot of ways, he kind of got a fair shake, although I do understand that he was 10 years older than John Cena. But, you know, we talked about it a bit in past shows that early on, you could have made the case that Batista was going to be that guy over John Cena. So I think the failed run of Randy Orton resulting in that kind of makes it okay, but it is still kind of weird to think about Randy Orton having such a black hole in his career in, let's say, 2011 to 2013, and then even kind of in the late 2010s. You know, he peaked with the Authority, where he became the face, and then after that whole run, he kind of took another backseat when they restarted the brand split, and he kind of hit on SmackDown. Like, I know he had a cup of coffee as WWE champion when he won it at WrestleMania 33 and then dropped it to Jinder Mahal at Backlash two pay-per-views later. But, man, I guess before we closed out quickly, like, 2017, 2018 was another really black hole in his career, wasn't it?
You look at his career, and we all have these moments that he provided, and we look at it as a, no doubt, a Hall of Fame career. He's a lock for a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, regardless of what he does from here on out. The guy is a Hall of Famer through and through. But when I look at the totality of his career too, like, there are certain time frames in his career that are just it's like a void. It's an abyss. And I think Randy would agree with that. On Broken Skull Sessions, he even alluded to that there were certain times in his life that were just not good. I mean, on a personal, professional level, he didn't even really want to delve into that too much because it clearly was a dark time for him on all levels of his life. And so, but at the same time, he gave us really good moments up until the last, couple of years. I would have said, man, this is a guy that just never felt like he reached his full potential. It felt like he was always holding back. It felt like he could have been so much more. He's great, but you knew there was something even better there, and he just never felt inspired. He knew that he was just kind of going through the motions, and yet going through the motions was still better than most people going all out. And that really told you how good this guy was. But that's why what I would have said had Edge not come back and really just completely ignited Randy Orton's career in 2020.
Yeah, 100%. That the Edge return was the best thing that's happened to Randy Orton, and it still is a damn shame that it was all done in the COVID era.
Criminal.
I mean, you look at all the things that happened during the COVID era, and I look at the run that Drew McIntyre had as just an amazing babyface, and now you're just like, what the hell is this? Like,
and
Drew
and now we're not only saying that, which is, I feel so bad for Drew, but now we're actually considering the fact that fans are probably going to turn on Drew at Money in the Bank. I can tell you right now, if he's within fingertips of getting that briefcase, and he's gonna have his hope spot. Everyone does in the match eventually. I can see fans booing him. So it's crazy that we're you know, at the same time we're saying the fans are actually tired of him in the title picture and they could actually boo him at the pay-per-view.
It's come full circle with Drew McIntyre, and it's damn shame. I you know, if you told me this a year ago, I would have said, you're crazy, but he's literally becoming one of the most gimmicky and most unlikable characters on the show right now.
Well, I mean, maybe he should just give us more history lessons. I mean, maybe we're not understanding just how valuable those are, and then just bringing it back to absolutely zero relevancy in what's going on. I can't stand what he's doing there. Off topic, but it's man, it's awful what Drew is doing with those promos right now. So, God.
Yeah, but I guess just to wrap it up with Randy Orton, I think that failed run as a babyface had a lot of positives, and you know, unfortunately, there were a lot of negatives, but I guess we just have to be happy that it did finally come full circle in early 2020. And even though it was a COVID era, unfortunately, we still were treated to a very special run that he gave us in 2020.
Definitely. And he's technically a babyface right now with Riddle, a reluctant one. So it's funny that we're talking about it. He's kind of being forced into this role, and he's not changing who he is, which I like. He's just being Randy Orton, and you know an RKO is eventually coming for Riddle, so at least we would assume. So this has been so much fun talking about this topic that I have never, ever given really too much thought to, and certainly we will come up with something just as good next week, I'm sure.
For sure, man. Looking forward to it.
All right. Have a good night, man.
You too. All right. Take it easy.
Bye.